Yalan, başkası yalan. Dünyada ölümden başkası yalan. Yalan, başkası yalan. Dünyada ölümden başkası yalan.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm speaking with Hugh Pope, who's the former Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Istanbul and is now a senior analyst with the International Crisis Group. He's the author of the much-acclaimed Sons of the Conquerors, Rise of the Turkic World, and more recently, Dining with Al-Qaeda, 3 decades exploring the many worlds of the Middle East. Welcome to Background Briefing, Hugh Pope.
Thank you for having me.
The Turkish elections over the weekend, they obviously were good news for Mr. Erdogan's party, the Justice and Development Party, otherwise known as the AKP. But nevertheless, they didn't get the majority they needed to make fairly substantive constitutional changes. Is that right?
They're still going to apparently try to make a new constitution, and they will certainly be trying to do it with their majority. The thing is that they don't quite have enough to do it on their own, which means that they will have to fulfill their promise of doing it in a consensual and all-inclusive way. Prime Minister Erdogan has repeated the promise to bring everyone in on this, and if they can really do that, which no one in Turkey has yet managed to do, so we'll have to see if that's possible. But you know, the signs are quite good on things like Turkey's Kurdish problem. We've already seen that both the main opposition party and the Kurds are in parliament, and the opposition party has promised that it is ready to consider the kind of reforms that would go a long way to settling the Kurdish issue. And what's amazing about the Kurdish party is that all the big figures of the Kurdish movement are now in the parliament. So it definitely looks like parliament is a place that can at least make a good start on settling that major problem of Turkey.
There's obviously a lot of alarm, particularly from the military circles who have long dominated the politics in Turkey, about the so-called Islamist party. But it looks like they've proven themselves to be fairly moderate, haven't they, to the Turkish people? And what are these changes that they want to make to the constitution?
You're right that the extraordinary success of the AK Party has really pushed the army right back into the barracks. And we have this extraordinary situation now where 10% of the serving generals of the army are currently in jail facing charges on coup plotting. So that's that out of the way. And the party, AK Party, Mr. Erdogan, they split with the conservative fundamentalist side of the old Islamic movement to create AK Party in 2001. And as you say, they've really proved to most Turks that they don't have a dangerous Islamist agenda. And I think that they will not try that in the constitution. It's certainly not something they promised to do. The problems are much more Turkish, shall I say. You know, we have a lot of questions about the authoritarian nature of the prime minister, about whether he wants to concentrate all power in a new presidency, and the whole question of, well, should parliamentarians all be immune from prosecution, and you know, what about the continued problem of corruption and underhand deals on state procurement and so forth. So all these things are things which would be good to see in the constitution, but we don't know whether the reform program is really going to go ahead to clean things up, which unfortunately is one of the reasons that we're not seeing so much of that recently, is that the Turkey has really lost touch with its European accession negotiations. But of course, that's another story.
Well, certainly a story that we can talk about in a moment. But obviously, Hugh Pope, again, the former Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Istanbul, I'm speaking to him now. He's a senior analyst with the International Crisis Group. Clearly, what's going on the southern border with Syria is a major preoccupation. And two questions there. The Turkish authorities on the border, particularly the military, are not being cooperative with the international press. And we know that the international press is entirely shut out of Syria. What's your understanding about that, and what do you hear from your journalistic colleagues?
Obviously, the government is keeping a lid on those refugee camps. I think that probably they don't want that part of Turkey to be some kind of loud hailer about all the terrible things that are going on in Syria. I think that, however, it's quite clear to everyone what has happened there, and I think the Turkish government is not trying to cover it up so much as not trying to make the situation worse. And it's also quite clear from what I've seen of the Syrian refugees who come to Turkey is they have absolutely no desire to see their faces broadcast on television or their identities revealed, because they're terrified of what's going to happen to their relatives back home. So perhaps Turkey's actions are actually in the best interests of everyone, even though there is this huge international thirst to know exactly what's going on. And other than that, it's hard to make judgments. But certainly Turkey's very wide also perhaps about encouraging even more people to come. I think the thousands that have come already will probably be enough as far as Turkey's concerned.
And recently there was a meeting of the Syrian opposition in Turkey, which initially the Turkish government had taken a fairly pro-Assad line, but they seem to be somewhat more on the fence now. What's the sort of local Turkish reaction to it? Is the man in the street appalled by what's happening inside of Syria?
I think the reaction is the same as everywhere else in the world, with the added dimension that there's a lot of shared history and a lot of shared culture, a lot of shared sense of neighbourhood with Syria. But I don't think there's much pressure on the government yet to get involved in Syria. There's quite a reflex in Turkey that, for all the talk of being brother Muslims and so forth, that the Arab world is unstable and can drag you into trouble that you have not expected. And so I don't think anybody in Turkey is suggesting to the government that they should go in and do something about it. However, of course, Turkey is the country with, in recent years, one of the best relationships with the Damascus government, and has been trying to use its influence for months now to try and get Bashar al-Assad to come off the fence, to clamp down on his security-minded relatives who want to solve this with force, and to really do what at one point the Turkish government called the shock treatment of reform, and delivering this message through the unmistakable telephone calls of Prime Minister Erdogan, who is a very blunt person when he wants to be. And this has had no effect on the Syrian government, and Turkey has clearly got very, very frustrated about it, because it is creating instability on their border. But as I said, they can't go in, and I don't think at this point that anyone in the Syrian government is in anything more than survival mode. They're not talking about the reform program at all. And on the other hand, no one seems to have an alternative right now, because everyone's very scared of civil and ethnic strife in Syria. So they don't want to push Syria over the edge. And Turkey is, like everyone else, trying to prepare itself for whatever may happen. And one of those things, as you mentioned, is to host some meetings. Well, I say host is a big word. The opposition to meet here, no one needs visas to come to Turkey, so it's all very easy. And in fact, that meeting of the opposition was a very positive development, in the sense that it got the opposition thinking about policies, about what they would like to see in Syria after any transition, instead of just going for a very simplistic Assad out kind of agenda. And I think that's very important, to develop ideas about what's going to happen next. And they came up with some. And I think you'll see in the long term that, yes, Turkey had a good relationship with the Assad family in the recent years, but that's because they ran Syria. They also have, which is something the United States or Europe does not have, is a very wide, broad, deep relationship with the Syrian people and Syrian cities, Syrian commerce, and Turkish companies have been investing there like mad recently. And so I think that when the transition happens, Turkey's going to be able to move in lots of directions to help Syria over the hump.
So, Hugh Pope, the fact that the Syrian Kurds are a part of the opposition, does that complicate Turkey's relationships with its own Kurds?
The status of Syrian Kurds is very complicated. As you may know, it's hundreds of thousands of them don't actually have Syrian nationality, and they are concentrated ethnically in one corner of the country, and they're also in major cities. And up till now, they have not been part of the events in Syria directly, it seems. However, I think at this point the Syrian, the Kurdish relationship is a discreetly Syrian problem. I think Turkey has got its Kurdish problem in an area where it's dealing with it on its own merits. As I said earlier, the recent election has put Turkey in a much better position to make a new start on dealing with the Kurdish problem. And 2 years ago, Turkey actually initiated something which it calls the democratic opening, which really, on 24 or more policy tracks, began to really give Kurds what they want in terms of human rights, ethnic rights, language rights. And I think this is a very good start. And over the next few years, it may, I think we'll see Turkey moving to an ending of the continued insurgency in southeastern Turkey. And I think that that dynamic is really protected now from Syria, particularly because Turkey has managed to solve its relationship with the Iraqi Kurds since 2007, and the Iraqi Kurdish leadership and Ankara are cooperating against the Kurdish insurgents in Turkey. So I think that Turkey is actually not very greatly, directly worried about what will happen to its sort of Anatolian homeland, if you like, from what's happening in Syria. I don't think it's particularly worried about its exports. I mean, exports to Syria, only 1% of Turkey's exports. I think it's much more concerned about the more general long-term possibility for instability in the Middle East as a whole that is represented by any future breakdown of Syria.
Again, I speak with Hugh Pope, former Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Istanbul. He's also a senior analyst with the International Crisis Group. When you say that Turkey will have, they already have a lot of trading connections with Syria, and that after the Assads are over, which I guess seems like the assumption that you're making, which is intriguing, that one would assume then that Turkey would have more influence. The Israelis are quite alarmed at their relationship with Turkey having gone sour. And the analysis that we hear over here is that Turkey is taking a more independent path, dealing with some of the people that the United States don't like Iran, for example. So is this a zero-sum situation in Syria? Would this be Turkey's win and Iran's loss?
To say, I think currently, obviously, the Syrian government that's standing now has been forced more into the arms of Iran and Hezbollah, say its main allies, if you like, in the region, than before. But I think that in the long term, the positive dynamics that we've seen emerge in Turkey over in recent years are the future of the region. Yes, they are more independent of its traditional Western allies, especially on matters like Iran and Israel, where Turkey by no means is in any alliance with Iran. It certainly doesn't want to see Iran get hold of nuclear weapons. But it believes that the U.S. tactics for dealing with Iran have been completely counterproductive for the past three decades, and it thinks that engagement is more likely to have a long-term softening effect on Iran. That's its tactic. And on Israel, well, frankly, the problems with Israel have started mainly with Israel's attack on Gaza in 2008-2009. Up till the end of 2008, Turkey was playing an extraordinarily positive role in brokering a peace talks between Syria and Israel, which, acknowledged by all sides, had been professionally and successfully done up until the point where Israel decided it needed to deal with its Gaza problem at the expense of, for instance, relations with Turkey. And then we had last year the Mavi Marmara flotilla attempt to break the Gaza blockade, in which Turkey went into it thinking it had some kind of understanding that they wouldn't be attacked, but Israel blocked them from breaking the blockade and killed nine Turks. And so since that time, relations have been very far down. And I think that until Turkish public opinion and Turkish government sees a change in Israel coming more sincerely into a peace process or being perceived as such in Turkey, I don't think many Turkish governments will reach out to Israel. And that being the case, I think that one should be aware that it's not an Islamist, power-hungry Turkey that is seeking to provoke Israel. It's just a more independent Turkey expressing what most of its people actually think about what's happening in the region. And I think there's probably something the West is going to have to get used to in a lot of parts of the world as its influence wanes. And for instance, Turkey has an accession process with the EU officially, but the way the EU has alienated Turkey with its, for instance, France and Germany have explicitly said they don't really want to see Turkey in the EU, which is reversing 50 years of treaty-based negotiations. Turkey feels that it has some justification for going on its own way. But you know, from our perspective here in Turkey, that's a very dangerous idea because, to tell you the truth, that the EU process in Turkey has been the locomotive for many of the economic improvements in Turkey in getting standards and investment safeguards in place that have allowed Turkey to become the regional hub and magnet that it's become. And it's also been the locomotive of the reforms and the new democratic ability of Turkey to conduct elections like we had on Sunday, which were undoubtedly extremely open, enthusiastically pursued, 80% participation, and very democratic process. But this has also been part of, again, from all the experience it's had in getting the country ready for the EU. And I think that in the long term, Turkey has to keep that and put new blood into that relationship, because the Middle Eastern neighborhood on the other side of Turkey remains dangerous and unstable, as we've seen in recent months. And I think that that's probably the main thing the new Turkish government has to do, is to really relaunch its European process and get the locomotive of reform and investment attractiveness going again.
Well, of course, the Turks have reached out to Europe on any number of occasions, and they get slapped in the face, essentially, by the French and the Germans. And one wonders whether they perceive that as a kind of racist insult. I don't know. I frankly don't know how to characterize it. Do you?
It's been difficult for Turks to stomach the way that they have been treated. On the other hand, you know, major European states can point at things that Turkey does that also they've overlooked in the interests of strategic relationships. You know, up until several years ago, torture was common, you could say, in Turkish jails. Now, during that EU process of recent years, that has been completely eliminated. Now, one hopes that they will deal with things like freedom of expression. You have, you also have 57 journalists in jail in Turkey for generally non-journalistic crimes, but you know, in Turkey that's a bit fungible, and you have hundreds of Kurdish nationalists in jail for non-violent crimes and crimes of conscience, if you like. So there are things that Europeans have to complain about. And to be honest, on the question like the main reason that Turkey's technical negotiations with the EU have broken down is over the island of Cyprus, which Turkey has occupied the northern third of since 1974 in the interest of protecting the Turkish Cypriots, the 20% minority community there. Unfortunately, in recent years, when it started its negotiation process to join the EU, Turkey did promise that it would open its ports and airports to the Republic of Cyprus, the Greek Cypriot part of the island, as part of the progress towards the European Union membership that it was looking for. And Turkey hasn't done that. And as a result, half of its negotiation chapters are blocked, according to that one missing element. And that's a card that Turkey holds in its hand. It's held in its hand for the past 4 years. And it's decided not to play it. And while, as you say, Turkey accuses Germany and France of ruining the relationship and blocking progress, in fact, Turkey holds a card that it could play, but doesn't play, that would get the relationship going again. So, I think we'll be careful of blaming one side only.
Sure. Well, I thank you for joining us, Hugh Pope. It's been a very interesting conversation, and we're very grateful.
Thanks very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Hugh Pope, who's a former Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Istanbul and is also a senior analyst with the International Crisis Group. He's the author of Sons of the Conquerors, Rise of the Turkic World, and Dining with Al-Qaeda, 3 decades exploring the many worlds of the Middle East. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with somebody who's as mad as hell about what's happening to the University of California and thinks the students should be too. Aynama şıkıdım, aynama şıkıdım, şıkıdım. Ay nerede, acayipsin.